That's Navarro Bowman highlights. Great story. I mean, great story. There aren't a lot of bright spots for the 49ers. Navarro Bowman coming off getting his knee absolutely crushed against the Seahawks. Now comes back and earns himself a contract. Set, you know, it amounts to, with the extension, about 7 years, $77 million. $20 million of it guaranteed, as we talked about, Nate, at the beginning of the show. 28 years old. Your thoughts on Trent Baalke's move?
Well, good for Navarro Bowman.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an awful lot of years, man. I'd be shocked if he made it to year four, but whatever. They had to spend money. Listen, Navarro Bowman's earned it. I spend so much time trashing Trent Baalke and the 49ers. Like, this is a really weird deal to give to a 28-year-old linebacker that came off a shredded knee. I mean, listen, he played great last year,
sure.
But, you know, the all-pro thing, you feel like there was just as much sympathy involved in his accolades last year and kind of like goodwill type of stuff built up as there was in his actual performance. Because as close as he was to back to before, I think most people agreed that he's just not quite there. And so to lock him up for seven more years, regardless of what the number is, I know NFL contracts are BS, but are you really expecting Navarro Bowman to be an all-pro through his age 35 season?
No,
not
even at full strength last year. Still coming back off that injury. And they say if you're going to recover, it's going to take you 2 years. He led the NFL in tackles, which is very impressive. 28 years old. I can't help. I'm with you. I'm very happy for Navarro Bowman. He deserves it.
And I'd love to get the chance to watch him.
100%.
I'm glad he's on my team. Financially, it's weird.
As a 40, and I also understand and am aware of the fact that nobody has more cap space than the 49ers at $42 million plus, at least before that deal. Cleveland with 41, Jacksonville at 41, and then it drops down to, weirdly enough, Carolina with $28 million in cap space. And there is a floor, and they have to meet it. I understand that. If I'm the 49ers, though, I look at a guy like Navarro Bowman, I trade him. I already traded him last. He is on the block. There are very few. Take away your youngsters that are on rookie deals. Take that one. Well, you know, rookie deals, not like in the NBA, but rookie, they're young. Guy like Navarro Bowman has maybe probably three more years.
Yeah, his contract before was fine.
I'd much rather have a pick for Navarro Bowman than sign him to an extension. At this point, you're not good. You're not going to be good. There's no chance you're going to be good. I think a dream season for the 49ers this year. I'm talking a dream as in you better wake up because it ain't happening is 500. Mm-hmm. That's a dream season.
Right.
They're more likely a 2-5 win team. So what did this do for you? You get a guy who's going to tackle people in losses? Get a pick.
Right.
Get a pick. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I credit him in the sense, even though he's under contract, I guess you credit him for signing it because instead of leaving San Francisco, but really, what choice does he have?
It's a tough one because, this is also kind of a video game move, too, where, like, you're running a franchise and you realize you have a ton of cap space, and you're like, oh, man, I'm going to ink this guy now, and then, like, 5 years down the road, you owe him an ass load of money, and your cap is all tied up in that. I get the idea behind it. Like you've got these two young, gigantic offense or defensive linemen in Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. Navarro Bowman playing behind him, like that guy should have 200 tackles a year and have them should be for a loss,
sure.
Right? Ideally. But I'm with you. I mean, it's such a tough thing where you have to take out the sentimental value of it. I'm happy to watch Navarro Bowman. Unfortunately, though, here's the other part of it, is every time I see Navarro Bowman, it makes me sad because Patrick Willis isn't next to him.
Maybe
it's time to just wash our hands clean of that entire era.
That's what I would say. It's one of those things where we're happy for Bowman, good for him, that's great, that's awesome. And this is going to be played up, I think, by a lot of Niner fans today. It's like, well, they finally did something right. Well, I guess.
My first reaction was why?
That's
Tell
my
me
reaction
why
too.
You had to do this.
Exactly. He
had three more years with him, I mean, is this simply because you, because now I forget who the reporter was, but it was, I'm sure it was a local guy like Matt or, you know, someone that covers for like the Mercury News or something like that. Maybe, you know, maybe even Matt Mayoko. But they had said that, you know, you had heard this week from hearing from Trent Baalke that it sounded like we have all this cap space. We're going to start spending it, which you'd think was positive until, again, you realize they just put it all into a 28-year-old linebacker with a shredded knee.
Well, at 7:40, we're going to have Scott Baer on. He is the CSN Raiders insider. 8:10, Dave Softy Mahler from KJR is going to join us to talk Seahawks as we roll through the NFC West all week long. We already stopped in Arizona, who just inked up Tyrann Mathieu, $40 million guaranteed, 5 years, $62.5 million. That's a hell of a comeback story, and Tyrann very, very grateful to the Cardinals. Looking for serious, they've got some serious bookends, I should say, on defense in Napa right now with your Oakland Raiders. A lot of buzz about this team and certainly about the defense, but they lost a big leader last year. Who takes that mantle over? We'll have sights and sounds. Well, really sounds for you. We're on the radio from Raider Camp in Napa next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. Welcome into The Drive. That's Coach Jack Del Rio of the Raiders saying he's not going to, maybe not necessarily said it there, but he's been very vocal that, listen, I'm not going to deal with we're moving questions all year. I have no control over that. Jack, and I know you know this, and I know he's probably listening right now in Napa, you're going to get those questions all year. And it is unfortunate. It does suck. It absolutely sucks. And I really hope he does a thing where, if somebody asks a question, he just says next question every time until reporters basically get tired of it. And he trains them to know that if you want to stop down the press conference and look stupid, go ahead, because anytime you ask me anything about moving, it's simply next question. And then everybody looks at you like you're weird. That's what, how I hope he handles it. I hope that's the last time he answers it.
I don't know. I think by virtue of the fact that it is unavoidable, like you said, he needs to handle it in some way with grace. I mean, if that means, hey, next question, don't come across like a flustered jerk about
maybe
it.
Maybe I've answered that already.
Right.
Maybe that would be
because
better.
You know, like if they keep peppering you with it and you keep saying next question, I mean, like there's the Bill Belichick way of doing it. But if you, like, if you show any sort of, I don't know, if you get flustered about it at all, to me, it's a fine line to walk, is all. If you're going to completely ignore a question that's going to be asked of you constantly, you have to have some sort of grace. Otherwise, you're going to, I don't know, look like it really is affecting you.
Real quick, as we jump through, I just wanted to throw this out. It was 10 years ago today that Talladega Nights came out. Inflation-adjusted box office totals. This is from Darren Revelle for Top Sports Comedies. It might take me
a while.
It's
a very narrow genre.
It really kind of does. Like top three. And I probably would have guessed Happy Gilmore was maybe in there. Mm-hmm. Major League, if that's technically a sports comedy. Talladega Nights, number three at $177 million. The Longest Yard at $195 million.
The original
million.
Or the Adam Sandler?
It's got to be the Sandler one, I'm imagining. The number one adjusted for inflation box office total for a sports comedy at $238 million. The Waterboy.
Wow.
I would not have guessed that at all.
Congratulations, America.
Seriously.
SC LSU Mud Dogs.
Speaking of linebackers that just scream and smash through offensive lines, Khalil Mack is a beast. What do you know? I don't know if I'm a Raider fan, I think, at least me, there's still a part of me that would hold out hope that Aldon Smith at some point is going to contribute.
Right.
Maybe I'm on drugs.
Maybe so is he.
But that defense should be damn good this year, and they've added a little bit on that secondary with Charles Woodson gone. Is Khalil Mack your leader? Is he your unquestioned leader, or are you looking at somewhere else?
I got to be real honest with you there. I don't really know that enough about his personality. Mm-hmm. I mean, on field, he's got to be the guy you look to for all the production. But that's really tough. I mean, when you're bringing – I think they're probably – this is totally out left field, Dave. I think they probably look at a guy like Malcolm Smith a little bit, who, you know, maybe isn't that big of a contributor, but he's very familiar with Ken Norton, and I think that's why he's there.
Sure.
If he hadn't been with Ken Norton in Seattle, you're probably right. Largely, I don't feel like I'm educated enough.
No,
to...
No, I understand where you're coming from. On the surface, you think it's Khalil Mack because he's leading by example. You're talking about a guy who was second in the league in sacks last year, in his second year in the league, going into his third year. You've got
perfect best player, yes,
absolutely. You've got bookend leaders. You have Derek Carr in his third year on offense. You have Khalil Mack in his third year on defense. That is a phenomenal place for a franchise to be in when you talk about rebuilding. It's a phenomenal place to be. Just some people aren't. And I'll go back to DeMarcus Cousins, for example, just real quick. He is the unquestioned statistical leader of this team. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that he is necessarily cut out to be a leader. I almost think DeMarcus is the guy who's best suited to go out there and do his thing and say what you want about him. But guys like Rudy Gay, guys like Rajon Rondo, they actually strike me as more of leaders that want to lead than DeMarcus. I think DeMarcus just wants to go out and play. Khalil Mack may be that guy too.
Yeah. And so, I don't know for sure, but he's the example guy.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. You can text us at 44-1140. Scott Bear coming up in about 10 minutes. CSN Insider for the Raiders as we'll continue to roll through camp. Dave Softy Mahler will give us the Seattle Seahawks preview at 8:10. Gus, you're on the drive.
Yeah, hey, guys. Listen every morning. First time called here in a long time.
Oh, appreciate that.
What you were saying, Dave, about Del Rio, about, you know, next question, because he has no control. And I, Nate, I have to say, I completely disagree with you. I don't think he owes anybody any grace. He has no control over what the Raiders do. So, you know, the reporters keep asking those stupid questions, and they just keep peppering them to get a reaction. Why can't he handle it like Belichick? I don't see why he shouldn't be able to.
No, that's fair. I'm just saying, when you put out a, you know, if you're not careful with the way you handle the press, they'll fillet you. And if you're not winning 12, 13, 14 games in Super Bowls like Bill Belichick is, I don't think he owes them anything, Gus. I'm with you on that. I just always rankle at coaches that get flustered. You know, Bill Belichick can give the one-word answers, and I don't feel like he's flustered. Whereas Mike Singletary would try to do the next question, we've got to look at the film. You could tell he was flustered and not cut out to handle that position. And what I'm saying is I want to make sure that Jack Del Rio is cut out to handle that type of position, those questions.
I hear what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying in that aspect, but it seems to me like it almost kind of doesn't matter how he answers it. They're gonna fillet it. They're gonna spin it their way either way, no matter how he answers or what he says. So there comes a point in time where he's just gonna have to do the next question thing, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's I'm with you. I don't want to sit here and say, hey, you know, Jack Del Rio owes answers to these questions. I agree with you, Gus.
Gus, all right. Give me a win total for the Raiders this year.
You know what? I've been a Raider fan all my life. You know, going back to the days when they had Schrader and everything, and you know, they've just been so disappointing every year, and I'm almost like getting tired of like hearing about them because I just want the season to start. But that being said, as nervous as I am, I'm going to say 11-5, guys. I really am.
Right. And let me guess, Gus, your nervousness, and we talked about this yesterday, is from the fact that the Raiders have sucked for so long, you're afraid of being overconfident and screwing something up with the karma gods?
Absolutely. It happens every year. It's like, oh, we made a good move. And every year it's the same thing, and they let us down. Last year they made a lot of strides, and I love what they have, and I love what they brought in. And I'm just exactly what you said. I'm just so nervous, and I'm like, I don't want to put all my faith into them, and then I'm gonna be screaming at the TV, and I'm gonna be just totally torn up inside every year. You know how it happens every year. I don't want it to happen this year, but I'm gonna go all in, 11-5.
I appreciate it, Gus, and thank you so much for listening. Great call. Charlie Casserly was on with Grant Napier yesterday.
He talked?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
We're seeing him on NFL Network every day. He was on with Grant yesterday, former GM of the Houston Texans. He talked about the Raiders. Seattle Seahawks preview at the top of the hour with Dave Softy Mahler from KJR up in the Pacific Northwest. We bounce back and forth between the Niners and Raiders. A text from a Niner person, at least I would imagine so. We were kind of goofing on the Navarro Bowman signing, like, whatever. Come on, guys. I'm glad the Niners took care of Navarro Bowman. He's a human being who shredded his knee for the team. What will a pick for Bowman turn into? Another player with all this potential coming off another ACL surgery. Let's just enjoy Bowman while we can. I'm happy for him. Also, from the 916, why are we criticizing a team for showing loyalty? We'll discuss both.
Do you think
he's
going to make it? Sorry.
No, I'm with you.
We got to go.
We'll hold that over. Do you think he's going to make it to the end of that deal? And was that a good move? We go inside the Oakland Raiders with Scott Baer of CSN next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. That's Coach Jack Del Rio on Derek Carr. CSN insider Scott Baer will join us in 4 minutes as we take a look at Raiders camp. We have two poll questions out today at The Drive 1140. I retweeted it as well, KHDK. You can find the polls. That's the bottom line. Two questions. Number one, from Nate, who would you rather have locked up for the next 3 to 5 years, Russell Westbrook or Steph Curry? 144 votes in less than an hour, 53%. Say Russell Westbrook.
Oh, it's narrowing the gap a little bit, though.
Just a little. It's a great question. It really is an interesting question to ask. The other question, in light of Westbrook extending, when he becomes eligible, would you also extend DeMarcus Cousins? 163 votes on this poll. 84% say yes. Which I think you can be a DeMarcus Cousins fan or even not a DeMarcus Cousins fan and vote yes on that one because of what we talked about earlier, that if he's locked up, he has more value.
Yeah, you need to – every decision with him needs to be made aware of the fact that you might need to trade him, and you need to be maximizing his value. And again, that's not, hey, trade him right now. But you got to know that at some – we all feel like we're at a tipping point, right? Like, it's either going to go one way or the other under Dave Yeager. And – you know, you got to be aware of the fact that you might have to blow it up tomorrow. So make sure that this guy's valuable, not just to you, but to everybody else.
We go to the 49ers and continue these texts at 44-1140. A new one during the break from the 916 on the same subject line. It may not be the best business decision, but it's comforting for the fans and the players, especially knowing there's somebody in their corner with money and security on a team scrambling with scrutiny. By the way, anyone retired lately from the Niners, that's from Justin. Thank you for the text, Justin. I understand the point.
I agree with that one, at least.
I understand the point as far as the look. I prioritize what is and isn't important to me as a 49er fan, and really getting back on the right track and winning ball games is what's important. And I'm not confident that the 49ers are going to be able to be a contender again, at least during Navarro Bowman's career or the good parts of it.
Yeah, and then, I mean, with some of the guys that they've let walk, too, over the last couple of years, like Mike Iupati being one of them, Dante Whitner leaving.
Yeah.
You know, guys that, and I understand the cap situations then didn't allow that. But, you know, it almost seems like a last gasp kind of PR save face move. Because I agree with that. Aside from my initial thought of why, it was also like, you know, it's good to be able to have that security.
Sure.
As a fan, to know that Navarro Bowman's going to be there. But, you know, we had the guy earlier talking about loyalty. And that's what, number one, neither you or I, Dave, I think is a hey, why aren't these players more loyal type of guys, right? That I know I'm less that way. You can kind of see both sides, but as far as like, dude, go get yours if you're a player, because these franchises are only committed to you insofar as you produce for them. So Navarro Bowman, this isn't about loyalty for the 49ers. Yes, they're taking care of this guy that sacrificed a lot for them, but do you think he's going to make it to the end of that 7-year deal?
And on top of that, they had to spend some money too.
Right.
They had to spend some money. It's a fine gesture indeed. It really is. But in the big scheme of things, like we talked about, I would rather Navarro Bowman. And by the way,
Michael Crabtree, Anquan Boldin,
yeah,
like all these.
Yes.
Frank Gore walked last year. I mean, it just all these guys go and you say, well, but we got Navarro for 7 more years. So what's the point now?
And wouldn't you rather even a lot of people saying, hey, good for Navarro Bowman. Good for him. Even if you're a Navarro Bowman fan, wouldn't you rather him be somewhere else on a contender, perhaps?
Hell no. Not on this one. I love him.
we get back into Raiders camp. Joining us right now, CSN Raider Insider, it's Scott Bear. Scott, it's Dave and Nate. Thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, we're doing good. We've just been rolling through camp. In fact, we were just listening to Jack Del Rio give the Heisman to Las Vegas questions and also talk glowingly about David.
Good at it.
He really is. And I'll ask you, because you're dealing with him a lot, it really is kind of an impossible position. It's the elephant in the room. At the same time, what the hell does Jack Del Rio know about moving to Las Vegas? He's trying to get a team into the playoffs.
Yeah, and if there's anybody to truly believe that they don't want to move outside of the East Bay, it's a guy that grew up in Hayward. So, you know, I think that his opinion is pretty well clear, but obviously he supports the guy that writes the check. So every now and then you get a new reporter from out of town, generally from somewhere in the vicinity. This one was from the Central Valley, who comes in and needs a quote or needs something, you know, on that elephant in the room. And Jack has answered it. Derek Carr has answered it. Khalil Mack answered it. It's kind of working its way through the roster. Everybody has the same answer, almost like it was, you know, printed out on a sheet of paper and stuck to their locker. And that's really okay with me. I never understood, like, what kind of insight those guys were really going to have. And in terms of it being a distraction or not, this is a team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2002. This is a team that hasn't been over 500 since then. This is a team that cares far more about what they're doing on the field than anything else that's going on off of it right now because of these circumstances, because they're trying so hard to do something different that where they play isn't exactly front and center.
Scott, this is something that Dave and I found ourselves, before you came on, severely unequipped to answer, not being around the team on a regular basis, so maybe you can help us here. We know okay. Khalil Mack is the best player on the defense. Is he also the vocal leader? If not, who is?
I think Derek Carr is and has been since his rookie year. He just kind of has it when it comes to leadership. He was taught that at a young age. I will say this about Khalil Mack, though. He has stepped up his game in that regard, and that's because Charles Woodson, at first, without actually saying it, and then more explicitly as it became clear Charles was going to retire, that he said, Khalil, if you're going to be the best player, even if you, you know, if you're going to be
Scott, did we lose you? Oh, there you are.
No, I heard somebody talking about the Hall of Fame game. But yeah, I mean, Charles Woodson really kind of pulled Khalil aside and said simply, hey, if you're going to be the best player, if this is going to be your team, you need to own it. And Khalil is a soft-spoken guy whose voice has gotten louder over the course of the last 4 months, and I think that that's been important. But he doesn't have to scream at the top of his lungs. He doesn't have to be a rah-rah guy when you got a guy like Bruce Irvin, who's an excellent quote, whether there's a microphone in front of him or not, or they're just practicing. He's come in and really established himself. So is Sean Smith, and I think that that's part of knowing who to pay in the offseason. Some guys are going to get too much money, right? But if you're going to overpay, pay the guys that help you in more ways than one, and they've done that with guys like Irvin and Smith.
CSN Raiders insider Scott Barrett joining us. You bring up Sean Smith along with David Amerson as well. That secondary looks a bit better. DJ Hayden's been under a microscope and for good reason. And from what I've seen, they're popping him mainly in nickel D's. He's looked good in the first four practices from what I've gathered. You're there, though. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so. He's bulked up a little bit, and while he still plays outside with the second unit, it's clear that he's focusing on the techniques that you need to succeed at slot corner. I also think as the number three guy, some pressure is off of him because you're right. Guys like me have been critical, and I don't think it's undeserved, whether it's been his inability to get on the field and stay there or his ineffectiveness last year once he played 16 games. So this is a first-round pick. This is Reggie McKenzie's first first-round pick, and all those things really put the anvil on his back. Now, he seems to act like he's free and clear of it, but even if he doesn't care about what we say, I think he cares about having a successful NFL career. And after the Raiders didn't pick up his fifth-year option, something that's afforded to all first-round picks, I think he was kind of put on notice there that, hey, get your career turned around or you're going to be kind of going from town to town and trying to make a roster. And I don't think that's what he wants. And so he understands that it's put up or shut up time. This is a contract year, whether it's with the Raiders or somewhere else. And his career, in my opinion, probably more important than at any point, high school, college, pro or otherwise, you know, for him, just in terms of on-field success, he's got to do it now.
On the other side of the ball, Scott, one of the biggest questions that I've had is at the running back position, like Latavius Murray, but there's not a lot of depth behind him. Tywan Jones, an explosive player, but possibly a return guy. What can you tell us about DeAndre Washington and what he's been able to do in the early stages so far?
If the Raiders are looking for a complimentary back, I think DeAndre Washington is a good one because Latavius Murray, tail of the tape there, 6'3", 230, runs upright, kind of a slasher. DeAndre Washington, he's listed at 5'8". I know I'm 5'6". I stand next to him. We're pretty close. And he's about 200 pounds and not quite a Maurice Jones-Drew type. He's not a bowling ball, but, you know, he can definitely, you know, run through some people. So I think he offers a contrasting style. He has a durability from taking 270 touches last year at Texas Tech. And more than his stats and what he's able to do, if you look at what he's being asked to do in these practices, you can really see that they have plans for this kid, maybe over Tywan Jones, maybe even over Jermaine Olawale and even Marcel Reese when he gets back into the fray, is that DeAndre Washington is doing a lot of different stuff. As a receiver out of the backfield, they're testing him as a pass protector. They're having him run inside and outside and do a bunch of different things to try to evaluate, okay, we're going to use this kid. Where can we use him best? So in terms of who the complementary back is to Latavius Murray, even though he's a rookie, even though he was a fifth rounder, he's clearly sitting in pole position.
CSN Raiders insider Scott Baer joining us on KHDK. We continue our coverage of the Raiders. Rod Woodson and Reggie Nelson have taken him under their wing. Ken Norton Jr. calls him a pack of dynamite, and one of his idols, Brian Dawkins, says he's a player most like him. This is all from your article up at csnbayarea.com about the brand-new rookie, Carl Joseph. Talk a little bit about him and his development so far through camp.
I mean, for a guy that tore his ACL in half back in October, he looks like really good. And the crazy thing about it is that once the doctors kind of signed off on his health, Jack Del Rio was just like, okay, there's your first team spot at strong safety. Have fun. And then kind of left him alone. And the crazy thing is that, yeah, we can't see if how big a hitter he is, except on college tape. Yeah, he has an interception. But there's a lot of things that we can't see when he can't totally tackle or totally go after it. Here's one thing that I do notice that I think is worth a whole heap of gold, is that this is a kid who's only been practicing professionally for less than 2 weeks now. And you don't see Rod Woodson or Marcus Robertson, the other secondary coach, or Ken Norton have to go over to him after a play is over and start saying, Carl, you're at a position. You got to go here. You got to do this, right? So when you don't see things like that, like, the kid just gets it. They threw him in there with the first team against good receivers and running backs, and he's just kind of going through it. Right now, there's some other tests ahead, especially during the preseason, and how's he going to stay up health-wise when he really starts knocking heads, and can he avoid getting hit when he makes himself like a, you know, projectile tomahawk missile and start taking people out. Those things are future tests. But what we know right now is that this kid fits in seamlessly, and it's a dream if you can draft somebody in the first round, good team or not, and you can plug and play him. And right now that's what the Raiders plan on doing, and he seems worthy of such a designation.
Scott Baer, Raiders insider for Comcast Sportsnet, with us on KHDK. Scott, over the first couple of years of Derek Carr's career, we've seen the progression of the offensive playbook. They've opened it up a little bit more and more over time. As he approaches the peak of his career, and again, I think there's a lot more room to grow, but as he kind of approaches that prime, what's the ideal, I guess, offensive look for them? Do you see a guy like Marcel Reese being phased out? Do they open it up more? What's the plan there?
that's going to be interesting. The one thing that I can tell you is that Bill Musgrave's playbook might be a bit taller and feature a bit more pages than War and Peace. they've got options, is what I'm saying. And I think what they're doing, and Bill Musgrave must be like a kid in a candy store, you know, because he keeps throwing stuff at Derek Carr, and then Derek Carr keeps absorbing and executing. So his options are vast, and I like it when mad scientists get to, you know, pour the red liquid into the purple liquid and see what happens. And that's sort of what's going on during this training camp. And the thing that I like is that coaches can have egos too, and he is asking Derek, which one of these plays do you really like to run? What works best for us, and what works best for you? Now, in terms of what they do, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Marcel Reese and how they use him, working out with some tight ends. Maybe he'll do some more straight receiving stuff. But I think generally speaking, especially if DeAndre Washington can be an effective pass protector, I think that Seth Roberts, that third receiver, that fourth receiver, I think you're right. Those guys are going to be on the field a lot, and they're going to take advantage of the fact that Derek Carr can sling it, something they haven't had very much. So I think that they're going to do that. I also think deep down, Bill Musgrave has coached guys like Fred Taylor and Adrian Peterson to the tune of over 2,000 yards, and he wants to have the option to be able to slug it out on the ground behind what's probably the best interior trio in Hudson, Osemele, and Gabe Jackson, maybe in football. So if they have a lead, they're going to milk it. If they don't, they're going to let it fly.
One of the ways they might milk it, obviously, is that running game. Roy Alou Jr. gone, and we're hearing a lot about Jalen Rich. Now, every year in training camp, there's a couple of training camp sensations, but this is a guy who's undrafted, went through the offseason workout program, and has had a good quality start to camp. Your thoughts on him?
He's going to have an opportunity to make the roster, that's for certain. And there's a couple undrafted guys, which seems weird because on a team that has more talent, that isn't like the 2013 Raiders where they're putting it together with, you know, cardboard and duct tape.
Right.
Those are teams where the undrafted guys are like, all right, here we go, real paycheck. He's going to have to earn his way on, I think, with Marcel Reese being suspended the first three games for PEDs. He's going to have a really strong chance. And you're right, he does have some wiggle. He's not quite as bulky as DeAndre Washington, but he's quick and he can kind of slide through cracks and things like that. And if you're going to have a backup for the backup, one, he's got to do something on special teams. And two, I think he's one of those guys that fans are going to like during the preseason. You know, every year there's a couple guys in games one and two in the fourth quarter when it doesn't matter much that, you know, really kind of, you know, sparks fly, you know. I mean, even a guy like Matt McGloin was that guy a couple years ago, Bryce Butler, Michael Dyer last year, names that you kind of learn and maybe forget over the years that are unfortunately trapped inside my brain where useful information could be. And so, yeah, I think he's going to be an interesting guy to watch. If I can just kind of expand upon that a little bit more with undrafted guys, a guy like edge rusher James Kauser out of Southern Utah is working with the second team a lot, really as Khalil Mack's primary backup at that kind of hybrid Leo spot. So he's somebody to watch as well. And there's a big pack of undrafted wide receivers out there, and there is an open spot for the number five wide out. And right now, Johnny Holton has been most impressive there. And I think guys like that during the preseason, when, you know, maybe you've had your third beer and you don't have a roster next to you and you want to pick out some numbers and some guys to watch, those are the three that I would key on.
You can read Scott Barrett, CSNBayArea.com, with all things Oakland Raiders. I'm sure we'll talk to you throughout the season. We appreciate you joining us. Have fun in Napa.
Thank you, gentlemen. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, Scott. That's Scott Bear. It's an exciting time for the Raiders.
You got me fired up about that. Open up the playbook for Derek Carr. Get your receivers out there on the field. Spread it out. Let the kid fire some balls in there.
Only, well, I shouldn't say only. He is the second highest touchdown throwing player his first two seasons of anyone in the history of the NFL. Only one person has thrown more touchdowns in their first two seasons than Derek Carr. So that's a fine, fine start indeed. If I'm a Raider fan, we say this after every Raider interview we do, but if I'm a Raider fan, I'm pretty damned excited this year.
I'm not, and I'm excited after that interview.
You're not a Raider fan, same with me.
Just hearing him talk about Derek Carr's progression and their plans for him, and God, I hope Bill Musgrave is having fun, because I would be.
I know personally the NFL this year is going to be a bunch of misery and heartache as a 49er fan, and I'm not going to lie. I never will be a Raider fan, but when you have a lot of friends that are Raider fans, at least the not obnoxious ones,
our only hope for good football this year. Let's be honest.
It really is. So, I mean, I might give them a secret thumbs up. Good for you guys. You guys have been dragged through the mud. And, of course, you'll be able to hear every single Raider game right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. We continue on training camps next from KJR. Dave Softy Mahler joins us to give us a preview of the hated Seattle Seahawks. And if you're not angry yet, I'm sure Softy will say something that will piss you off, which will keep his consecutive piss-you-off streak going at about 17 interviews on this station. It's your home for the best live and local coverage of the National Football League, Sports 1140 KHTK.